the funders also, could we say, of the seminar. We have Rauni Räsänen from the UNESCO Committee of Finland, professor, who has followed the Education for All process maybe right from the beginning. Is that right? Yes. And also professor from the University of Oulu. And we have Jussi Karakoski, who is from the Ministry for Foreign Affairs of Finland, education advisor. And they will discuss the EFA and Finland's collaboration in this area. You're welcome.
Okay, good morning. If it's still morning, yes. We have agreed that I start first and Jussi continues, and then I come in again and Jussi comes again, hopefully. Let's see. Okay, but we are going to discuss EFA process, and particularly then, of course, focusing on the last report. But additionally to that, we want also you to, during these days, to think what would be the future of EFA and what should be done in future. And that's why we are going to give you two tasks which you can think of during these days. One is writing on the pieces of paper their ideas about how to... ideas for the remaining 3 years before 2015, because as we know, the deadline is coming close, and we haven't got very much time, and we have a lot to do. So, bright ideas, new ideas about what should be done and how it should be done and could be done. And as you know, we are also, or preparations hopefully have started for EFA 2015. We are going to discuss more about that, we hope so. And so we need ideas about what would you like the programme or the agenda post-2015 EFA to be like. So two big tasks. But we start about a little bit about the process of EFA process first, and I know that this is something familiar for you, but just to remind all of us and also to highlight certain points. Often we are talking about now Millennium Goals and Education for All goals, but of course foundation for that was laid long time ago. And ideas about universal human rights are already stated in the human rights documents, starting from the Declaration of Human Rights. Even the ideas about free education and compulsory education, and also what it should be contained. It's Article 26 that states those ideas. And then it's further discussed in the later rights conventions and documents. And very good for us to remember, of course, is that when it says that it's a universal right, that particularly when we talk about children, that means that it's a grown-up people's responsibility and duty. Hopefully they take part in the process, but still they can't take care of their rights, so it's up to the grown-up people to take it to their responsibility. Millennium Development Goals were developed parallel to Education for All goals. In fact, the Education for All goals were published before that. But it's very important to find the connections and see the connections between the two. And of course, also how education as its part supports all the Millennium Development Goals. A goal I want to highlight here is the last one, which is very seldom discussed. which in some way also concerns all of us. How to develop a global partnership for development. When the Millennium Goals were developed, it was very, very good that they became more concrete. There were deadlines, but there was very little discussion or at least text about how to go about it. And that's why it's very important, the last goal is also very important. What is the mechanism to reach them? And particularly now when the consultations about the post 2015 Millennium Development Goals have started, they seem to discuss a lot in the papers also about how to make the process really global and how to involve as many in the process as possible. Okay, then after Jamtti and the framework for EVA and the goals there. And as you can see, they try to cover the whole educational path, the whole, the different age groups, the early childhood. The goals are different for the different goals, but still somehow involving them all. Early childhood, then primary school age children. The report we are going to discuss today about particularly focuses on goal 3. Ensure the learning needs of all young people and adults and see that they get appropriate learning and get life skills programs. And then literacy, gender. And the last one is maybe the most demanding. And particularly when you read the last one, you realize how big the task is. Improve every aspect of the quality of education. Recognized and measurable learning outcomes achieved by all, especially in literacy, numeracy, and essential life skills. Not a small task. And in all of these also what is important, which because we have abbreviated them, it's not stated, but in all of them they usually mention certain groups, like especially disadvantaged children, girls, children in difficult circumstances, and so on. So they also show who are the ones to be particularly concerned about. And in most of the reports, also there are results about the different groups, how they are doing, thinking of the different groups. And also new groups which maybe have not been thought are also emerging. Like in the latest report, I think there was quite a lot of discussion about the increasing number of urban youths and how to address their educational needs, particularly thinking of the vocational sector and their employment. Okay. About the coordination, we know that UNESCO has coordinated the EFA process. And also what is very important is that, and I think a very, very good thing, that we have developed the monitoring system and the monitoring reports on different aspects. Sometimes the reports have been focusing on where we are in the beginning and in the midterm report, and then there are a lot of reports focusing on certain aspects, like on gender, literacy, and so on and so forth. And the last one is then focusing on the youth and skills. And the drama we saw was excellent in showing what sort of skills maybe we need. The monitoring system itself certainly in the future also needs development. And there has been discussion about the indicators, whether they are most relevant, what should be taking on board, whether they also are very fair, thinking of the different countries, and whether they are very fair thinking of where the different countries begin in the development process, whether we should develop more also indicators and ways of evaluating which show how much improvement there has been, and also more considering the context of different countries and whether the challenges are much bigger, whether the population is changing a lot in the countries and there's a lot of immigration and so on and so forth. The vocational sector and youth and their skills, thinking of the reports and goals and discourses, have not got so much attention as they should have got, and that's why it's very important that it's now discussed and we have a report. Okay, I stop here about that because I know that Jussi is continuing about this the latest report. Another aspect I, in my introduction, want to discuss is particularly the role of the meanings and role of education in these processes. Because one thing which is also very important now to discuss and consider is what role education will have in the Millennium Development Goals or the next ones. Will it have separate goals or is it embedded and where it's embedded and how it is embedded? But of course, very important question is also that do we have or will we have a separate agenda and program? Most of us hope, but let's see. So what's the connection and what is the role of education and how is education's role defined and how it's understood in the future, and maybe we can find some help also from the past for when we think of that. It's always good to revisit also the old documents so that we don't invent or we don't think that we invent new things, because a lot has been done already. And the two ones I've mentioned first are very important to know in the process. The 74 and 95 documents concerning global aspects in education. And they have fairly detailed descriptions about what it means to different sectors and different stakeholders, for instance. The document I particularly want to highlight is Delors' report from 1996. The whole name is Learning, the Treasure Within. Why I consider that very important is that the way it defines education is rather good to think. And he has very concretely discussed also lifelong learning and the different possibilities and aims at different parts. Also very much discusses education as a whole. And for instance, saying that we tend to focus too much on knowledge. And many other aspects are also important, of course, including skills and attitudes, values that are leading our work. And she almost also says that it's very important. Now we think, when we think of aims, also very important to think how we set the aims. Of course, it's important to have them, at least on some level, very concrete ones. But he also says that we need utopias also. so that they must be also ambitious enough. And even if we don't always reach them, we should also have our aims rather high. And also remember that it's a process, and we can always improve the previous processes and from where we got time before. Also, he discusses a lot about how to work together in international connections and about partnership, for instance. And he divides the educational aims into four areas: learning to know, and he's discussing how wide the general knowledge base should be, and then where and when to focus on particular areas. Learning to do, what sort of skills we need, and how we live together. About all the basic principles about human dignity and human rights and peace and intercultural understanding and so on. And how to be, how to develop as a personality and as a human being. And he is discussing the different areas of the holistic development of a human being. In some of the documents I was reading, which were preparing for the post 2015 time, they were also recommending that we should go back maybe also to Delors' ideas about education and its... Then the document, which was just recently sent to me by Kati Antalainen, was Education First. An excellent one. For a long time I haven't been so enthusiastic about any educational document for many reasons. One reason, of course, is that it's initiated on a very high level. It's Secretary General's advocacy paper for development in education, very much emphasizing education's role in development agendas. And he reminds us all there that the promise was given in 2000, for instance, and it's time to act. We haven't got very much time. And he is also pointing out that there are a lot of new challenges compared to that time, and particularly pays attention to the vast disparities and growing disparities between groups of people, countries, areas, and how to tackle that challenge. Then he also the people who wrote it, the document, in a very concrete visual way, show how education is connected to the other millennium goals and areas of development, how it's connected to health, how it's connected to sustainability, how is it connected to poverty issues, and so on. But of course, it depends what kind of education also. It's not just education, so it's a lot also a quality issue. So he divides or distinguishes three priority areas. First of all, put every child to school. And what is also interesting is that, which is similar to the report which will be launched tomorrow, and which UCB will be talking about, in addition to primary education, he also pays attention to secondary education and its role. Then he discusses a lot about how to improve quality, but also relevance. Relevance of education. And analyzes the barriers. And again, what I like about this document is that it's very easy to communicate through that with other people because there are a lot of pictures. It's not complicated. It's not bureaucratic text. And there are very good visualizations also, for instance, about education first environment. Sort of school building where nutrition is taken care of, where there's it's safe to be, where there's health care is taken care of, and there's sanitation and there's clean water and so on. The third aspect is also very interesting: foster global citizenship, which he also very much focuses, and definitely relevant in all situations in all countries. And also there are a lot of connections to other processes which are going on, like sustainable education for sustainable development process and global education processes in different countries. In the end, he also then defines 10 key actions to be taken, and very interesting also, has identified the stakeholders, including media and families, governments, donors, and academia, and so on, and what their role and responsibilities in the process is. So please read it. It's a good one. And maybe gives ideas also for post-2015 developments. Okay, this is my last one, and I don't touch this because we had the drama about that, but in the newest monitoring report, they also try to analyze what education, and as we learned, they have defined the skills, and now they are focusing on skills, into three categories: foundation skills, transferable skills, and technical and vocational skills. Looking at it, I was criticizing that foundation skills are in that report rather narrowly measured, because it focuses very much on literacy and numeracy, which of course are essential. But thinking of a vocational sector and thinking of different contexts, practical skills should be started, of course, from the very beginning, thinking of things, how to cook and how to take care of your health and nutrition and your what you do with a handicraft and all sorts of skills, and they are very often neglected in curricula for smaller children, and still they would be lay foundation for the later vocational skills also. Also very difficult, of course, define what are transferable skills. We might come to very many different conclusions. They are talking about solving problems and communication skills and so on. Certainly important. So all in all, understandable thinking of the focus, but maybe from the education point of view, everything is not included. That could have been included. But very important in the sense that it focuses on this particular area and age groups, and also the problems of mismatch between education and vocational sector, and the dead ends that there might be for young people in their careers, and how they could be overcome, and previous studies and being acknowledged, and developing systems to acknowledge and overcome them. Okay, then Jussi will continue.
Thank you, Rauni. Building on that background provided by her, my aim is twofold: to bring everybody on the same page in terms of what we know about the EFA goals, where do we stand in relation to these goals globally, and focusing on developing countries, and then some brief facts about Finnish development cooperation in education in a nutshell. This is just a very brief introduction to the report, EFA Global Monitoring Report. We'll have a much more thorough presentation tomorrow. I hope many of you have already downloaded the document or the summary from the internet. You'll get your own hard copies tomorrow, at least, of the summary. And the main report is online, and for students, researchers and practitioners, there's not just this 40-page summary, 400-page main report, but also a wealth of thematic and country case studies, so a lot of background material for study and research. So I just want to encourage you to go to the website and check for yourself what is of your special interest. So, in a nutshell, the completion of free and compulsory education, compulsory primary education, which is defined as a human right in several human rights conventions, is not fulfilled for all. That's very clear. The report says that 61 million children of primary school age are currently out of school in the world, which is such a huge number of people that it's hard to imagine. However, only a decade ago, there were 108 million children out of school, so you can also see that there's been a lot of progress, and there's also been a lot of population growth during this decade. So education systems have really expanded enormously. So there's been unprecedented progress, which is largely, or at least very much, due to this international consensus built around the EFA goals and MDG goals in education. So, but success story, not the success story yet, and we can see that we cannot fulfill all the aims and reach all the goals by 2015, so I would hesitate to call it a success story as a whole. The key policy measures, especially in developing countries, which have led to the progress, have been school fee abolition in a big number of countries, especially in primary education, massive teacher training and retraining, continuing teacher training and recruitment of new teachers, both trained and untrained teachers, and also massive classroom construction in many countries. Key messages emanating from the 2012 EFA monitoring report are the following. One, progress, which has been relatively rapid until recently, a few years back, in terms of access, is really stagnating. The pace of reform, pace of progress is slowing down as, and has actually already started. Number of out-of-school children is already increasing in sub-Saharan Africa. Not elsewhere, but in sub-Saharan Africa, unfortunately. Also, aid to education is slowing down. The financing gap is not filled by aid donors. 4/5, by some World Bank estimate, of the progress in education is due to national commitments, national budget financing, and 1/5 only of education aid. And therefore, the initiative of the UN Secretary General, Education First, is really important at this moment. And slow progress has left a huge skills deficit among young people. Many students drop out before they master even basic numeracy and literacy, let alone other life skills and skills needed in working life, especially. If we go very quickly, goal by goal, the 6 EFA goals. Early childhood care and education is very much affected by undernutrition or malnutrition of young children in developing countries. 171 million children under 5 were affected by moderate or severe stunting as a result of this in 2010. And so the school readiness is just one issue where this is very clearly shown, is really affected. And in addition to that, less than 1 in 6 in low-income countries went to preschool in 2010. Again, let alone other early childhood development, care, and education. So, entering primary school, a big majority of children are not ready for school in the way that we would like them to be. And as I already mentioned, number of out-of-school children is still above 60 million, and half of them live in sub-Saharan Africa. Considering the youth, adolescents, there are even bigger number of adolescents, 71 million by the UNESCO estimates, out of school and without necessary skills needed for work. Adult literacy is as long as I remember, the EFA reports have reported a very similar number, around 700, 800 million adults who cannot read or write, and the majority of them being women. This number hasn't changed, and it's not very likely to change by 2015. Of course, younger generations, their skills, reading and writing skills, numeracy skills are better than the older generations, but the pace of change is so slow that it doesn't really... that figure, that indicator doesn't really show any progress. In terms of gender parity and gender equality, now focusing on gender parity, there the picture is much more mixed. In less than 20 countries in the developing world, the disadvantage is really big in favor of boys, so the girls have really a big catching up to do. But it's a relatively small number of countries. And boys are actually disadvantaged in over half of the 97 countries that have not achieved gender parity in secondary school. So mixed picture there. And the most complicated, as Rauni described, of the goals, quality of education, that is perhaps the most worrisome. Of 650 million children of primary school age today, at least 250 million could be failing to read or count during their time in school. Now, at the very, very generalized level, considering these enormous challenges in terms of access, I would highlight just a few issues. If we look at globally the picture, who's still out of school, there are a few top priorities on the international agenda. One is, as I mentioned, girls' education in approximately 20 countries is still a very big issue. Girls' equality and equality in education is an issue in a much bigger number of countries, but just in terms of access to school, a relatively few countries there. Disabled learners is one of the biggest groups out of school, and that's an issue everywhere in the developing countries, partly also in the developed countries. And then there's a wide variety of other disadvantaged groups or marginalized groups. I don't want to be exclusive here, but I'd like to mention pastoralists in many countries, working on street children. But there are many other groups as well, depending on the context. So focus to get education for all to really mean for all and not just for the majority. Then second group of big issues in terms of access is fragile states. Half of the children out of school are not quite half, around 30% of the out of school children are from fragile states or in fragile states, especially in sub-Saharan Africa, but also elsewhere. A third issue is that there are 12 large countries where you'll find almost 50% of the out-of-school population of the world at the primary level. So 12 countries, if they would get all children go to school, we would reduce the number of out-of-school children by 50%. And in that group of 12 big countries, there are some who are making really good progress. For instance, Ethiopia is making very rapid progress. Pakistan also making progress, India. But then there are some, like Nigeria, which is out, and some others who are not really committing themselves to the goals, and where you see very little progress at the moment. The second big issue is the quality and relevance gap, and low learning achievements are a major issue practically everywhere in the least developed countries or developing countries. At the same time, as I mentioned, 71 million adolescents are out of school and without necessary skills for life and work. So I think Rauni gave you the some homework to give ideas on the colored papers. I think this is very much an issue right now. What can be done by 2015 and how this would affect setting the new goals after 2015. So these issues, major issues, have to be tackled at the same time. Finland has been and is committed to the UN Millennium Development Goals and EFA goals in education, as you know, MDGs number 2 and 3, and the 6 EFA goals already mentioned. The program decision in principle by the Finnish government, development policy program published this year, states that in human development, covering education, health, and social protection issues. Finland is, for example, and now I'm focusing on education, supporting the global education and health goals already mentioned in cooperation with like-minded countries in various fora, and advancing and focusing on rights of children and young people, particularly girls, to education from early childhood development to higher education, and by combating child labor and especially the worst forms of child labor. Promoting employment of young people, very much linked to the theme of today, and building the capacity of educational institutions as a means to this end. If we look at Finnish education aid in brief, the picture is rather positive. I mentioned that globally the picture is not very positive. Many major donors in education are reducing their commitments at the moment as a result of shifting priorities or economic downturn in their countries. In Finland, the disbursements in education have been increasing for several years since 2007, and they hit an all-time high last year at 38.8 million euros. In commitments, the development is even more encouraging. The year-on-year change from 2010 to last year was a doubling of our education commitments, and we reached an all-time high as well at 64.9% million euro, which is gives a good prognosis for the next 2-3 years to come in terms of actual disbursements. Education's share of our bilateral sectorally allocated funds has been 7.5% in commitments and 6.3% in disbursements, and has increased for a few years now. How we use the education aid: two-thirds, 65% of it is bilateral aid from government to government, usually in the form of sector programs, joint funding arrangements, supporting the government's own sector strategies. One-third, 28% roughly last year, was NGO cooperation, so it's very important. Multilaterals, education, thematic aid through multilateral organizations was only 5% last year, and then local cooperation funds provided by the embassies, 2%. The main recipient countries of Finnish education aid are among the long-term partner countries, Ethiopia, Mozambique, and Nepal, and from other countries, Haiti, which is temporary assistance, occupied Palestinian territories, and Zimbabwe. Among the multilaterals, there's some acronym soup for you. In the UNESCO family of organizations, we support a program, big program on capacity building for EFA, which supports UNESCO operations in many countries. We support UNESCO Institute, International Institute of Education Planning, IIEP, support the UNESCO Institute of Statistics, providing this data for the report, and also the GMR team, which is actually preparing the report. Of other international organizations, I could just mention Forum for African Women Educationalists, FAWE, ADEA, Association of Development of Education in Africa, and a Global eSchools Initiative, which is an international organization supporting ICT policies and ICT for education in general. Then a very new thing is Global Partnership for Education, which is a major funding source for many countries. That's in the pipeline or in planning. We hope to start supporting GPE from next year on. In addition to that, we provide a lot of co-funding, which is not targeted to education, but also covering education. European Development Funds of the EU, UNICEF, World Bank co-funding, African Development Bank, Inter-American Development Bank, and Asian Development Bank. And then we fund through general budget support, budget support operations, for instance, in Mozambique, Tanzania, and Zambia, a big part of that going to education. So, back to you, Rani.
Okay, let's go back to your homework. Just to somehow to give you ideas or more questions, I have asked a lot of questions myself. These are maybe the most essential questions to ask, but might give you some ideas what sort of questions you could ask and particularly what answers you could give. So, first of all, I've asked that thinking of the remaining 3 years now, and how to motivate and engage for the big push, the 3 years. What should be done? What could be done? That's something you could think of. And I've just identified certain aspect I've been myself thinking of, for instance, the university's role in this. What can they do, what should they do in the present economic situations, where very often economic benefit is asked. Also, how to convince different stakeholders when the results are not so visible, when education is an area where you have to wait for the results. It's not very easy to concretely see them, and it takes time before you see the fruits. Also, how to maintain vision and direction clear. I'm particularly asking this because together with Kati Antalainen, we made an evaluation of the global education program, how it's implemented in Finland, and particularly universities, when they were talking a lot about internationalization, but it seemed that it could be almost anything. So what's the vision if you connect it to EFA process? Also, how to include global citizenship education and values to national and international processes. And as we know, in Finland, we are just constructing the national guidelines for the curricula. How to influence that process and make this global citizenship issues visible there. How to remember the holistic idea of education? So that knowledge is good, but not enough, in Finland and in international cooperation. And how to remember the crucial significance of culture and context, and of course partnership, in international cooperation and in practice in the middle of educational export discourses, for instance. Get a lot of new actors in the field, which is good, but how well do all people at the time said efficiency and neither being efficient, how patient people are in getting understanding of different contexts and cultures and giving the ownership to the people who know the context. How to use assessment for development wisely. We need evaluation and assessment about the processes. We have to have feedback about how, whether there has been changes and improvements, but what sort of, so that we don't start to measure the things which are easy to measure and forget about the maybe much more essential issues, and how to develop the qualitative part of evaluation and ways of evaluating which also give credit to the improvements that have been done in different contexts, thinking of where the challenges and where people started the processes. So in evaluation assessment is a very, very good servant, but it's not a very good master. Okay, then more precisely about EFA beyond 2015. Thinking of the preparation processes, for instance, how should the preparations be made? Who should be consulted and how? And what sort of negotiations should we have? And how to make it as inclusive as possible? Who leads the process? UNESCO should. We should encourage and tell UNESCO to take the leadership and see that the processes is done thoroughly and well and inclusively, and decide what sort of process it should be. And how to use the experiences and evaluations we have now already, quite a lot of data. And we should remember not to start always from the beginning. We should use all the data we have gained and we have, and make new plans from there. Then one thing, of course, I think I mentioned that previously already, there are two aspects, how education is going to be visible in the general goals, the Millennium Goals beyond 2015, and do we have a separate program and agenda for education for all, and what that would be like. What should the goals be like? How specific? How many? How focused? Is it good to be very realistic or maybe a little bit idealistic or utopian, or what would be wise? How many areas should we focus? What are the most urgent? What are the most needed? What matters? Areas? Groups? What are most essential issues? What would be the time frame when we make the new plan? Hopefully, when we make, not if. Should it be 2030? Or is that a too short a time? And what would be the indicators then for the new monitoring mechanisms? And of course, the whole implementation then, when we have made it, how to implement it, because that's very often the most difficult thing. We have a lot of documents, but the roadmaps and pathways and milestones for the implications and for the responsibilities of different partners in that process is very important also. So all the ideas are welcome. So we hope a lot of new ideas during the 2 days. And you can hang them up on the wall there when you have filled in the papers. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Rauni and Jussi. And Rauni and Jussi will be with us for the 2 days and also today at the dinner. So please contact them and ask for more questions. We are running short of time, as you know, and we plan to have lunch, but we would like to have one more presentation now before lunch so that we can try to squeeze a little bit our timetable. Due to the power cut that we had this morning, we are a bit late. But I would like to welcome